Representative Flats.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. It sounds like a real good proposal to me. Not a mandate, but a local option. Offers potential for great cost savings, more efficiency for our local school districts that are really looking for ways to get the most bang for the bucks that they have. And some of the issues that have been raised, I think, are important ones as we look toward effective implementation of this. But as a general policy direction that the state would go, I think this is commendable. I seem particularly, and this may be a question for Mr. Richter, who did some of the analysis of cost savings that might be involved, is whether or not you notice any differences in the cost savings that might accrue to smaller school districts versus larger ones, or rural districts versus metro. And the reason I ask is, you know, a school district as big as St. Paul might find some economies of scale just by their own size in selecting their vendor. But school districts that are much smaller than a district that size might not be able to achieve those economies of scale without consolidating their back office operations with a number of school districts, which, if done through a state agency, could be all of the school districts in the state that don't find their own economies of scale with their own selected vendor. Did you notice, are we able to draw any distinctions in sizes of districts or anything like that?
Mr. Richter.
Yes. Actually, I think that, as was mentioned earlier, that there are some school districts, some smaller school districts, that can quite frankly do a lot of their reporting and even their HR payroll processing, all those kinds of things, on simple Excel spreadsheets or using off-the-shelf software that one might buy at a computer store. But I think it is the larger districts, as you mentioned, where the St. Paul's, the Minneapolis, and even the Hopkins, Edina, Wayzata, those size school districts where a lot of the savings can occur. But I think that is why we're, in my vision now, is more of a truly an integrated all reporting systems, all HR processing systems, all back-end office systems, whether that's one vendor or whether that's multiple vendors. The key is that the end data is all talking to each other. And so even smaller districts, so for example, maybe a smaller district right now, maybe they have one person dedicated to providing some of this data, and then maybe they have to maintain their own hardware, their own software, and all the associated costs with that. If there was a centralized system or multiple systems, multiple vendors that were talking to each other, it's possible that those costs would go away. Certainly in the smaller districts, the savings would be smaller than in the larger districts, but probably not too much different on a cost per student basis, is I think what we're talking about. I think another key that probably answers many of the questions that were asked today is planning. I think, as I mentioned in my testimony earlier, I believe that the reporting system is one step in the whole thing, and I believe that the Department of Education, you know, there needs to be an overall vision, an overall plan of what the state wants to do moving forward with this. And I do, as a parent now I'm speaking, not as an expert in any of the systems as the other testimony you heard today, you know, when I hear things like using the analogy of shifting someone from a Mac to PC, as a parent, if that's going to save a considerable amount of money and we can add two teachers back in the Hopkins School District or add band back into a district that had to eliminate band or allow more kids to participate in extracurricular activities, I look to the state as a parent to have a vision and a long-term plan on how we're going to make use of efficiencies that are available in technology that private businesses are using all the time. How can we take that savings, spend the same amount of money we're spending on education today, but put that money back into educating children? And if again, I can use forgive me for using the private business analogy so much, but that's where my life is if you look at successful private businesses, they focus on what their core product is. And our core product in our school district is producing smart kids, not in producing software systems, not in managing custom hardware systems. It's producing smart kids. So if there's a way that the state can have a longer-term vision, and this bill being potentially a part of that vision, of really getting out of the software and hardware maintenance business and spending those dollars on educating kids, that's where I think we need to go. So I'm not particularly, I probably went way off on your question, and I apologize. But I wanted to make the point that it is, I think a lot of those questions will occur in the planning and why the RFP and getting smart people together at the table to figure this out is very important.
Thank you, Mr. Richter. Ms. Widener, we'll call you back if we have more questions at this point. Okay, if you would, then I'll skip ahead. Representative Mariani.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Appreciate that. Ms. Widener? I just wanted to be clear, Mr. Chair, Ms. Widener. I read the bill the way you read the bill, which is that it's focused on the data collection and reporting requirements of the MARS system. And obviously, there was a lot of discussion. I think there's a lot of creative energy about where this could lead toward in the future, and hopefully with very careful deliberation with the department, et cetera. So I just wanted to be very clear, because my sense is what you said earlier, and Representative Sikora and Representative Greiling and myself have been participating in the stakeholders group on looking at the value-added component to our state system of assessment to align with the NCLB. And one of the major topics of discussion of late has been one of the potential weaknesses that we need to address in order to move aggressively in that area is to be able to address some kind of a uniform sharing of data across schools and school districts. So I like this bill because I think it moves us in this direction, and I think we can probably clean up some of the qualitative language that Representative Demmer, I used to like this qualitative stuff in state law. Now it causes more mischief than good, I think. It's better just to keep stuff as objective as possible. But my question to Ms. Wagner is that with the understanding that we have, that the bill is indeed focused on the MARS system, and this is something that you would be supportive of, is that correct?
Representative Mariani, Mr. Chair, yes, we've been looking at the way we collect data from schools and are right now in the very beginning stages of trying to make that into a SIF compliance system. As I'm hearing the testimony, I'm hearing a lot of SIF compliance, references to SIF compliance. SIF is a schools interoperability framework. It's based on some cutting edge technology for data exchanges and data design. We've been talking about having a system where we could serve at the state as a hub for data exchanges. So insofar as that would be part of this bill, I think we'd be very supportive of that. Where we get a little bit nervous is talking about scheduling systems for schools, because that just has never been our purview at all. But the data that is collected for those various systems ultimately goes into a MARS collection or a STAR collection, which is a teacher collection, or a disciplinary incidents collection. And we're well aware that there's a burden on schools to be entering data into multiple systems. So if we can get into a SIF-compliant system and be a hub for data exchanges, that would be along the lines of our strategic vision. I don't see that as incompatible with what's in the bill. I just get concerned about the scope of the bill with the amount of money and having kind of an unclear. I'm just personally unclear about the scope at this juncture.
Okay. Representative Carlson.
Mr. Chairman, I want to go back. I got a couple of questions. So the first one is going back to the money question and the discussion. And I think this question would go to the gentleman from Wayzata, the school board member. You indicated that, or at least somebody did, that a lot of this money is being currently spent. And yet the response was that $2 million is needed up front and then $5 million on a continuing basis. And so put that together for me, if the money is currently being spent by and large, why that need? And then the other question I have relative to that, you indicated that in Wayzata you figure it would be about $10 per student. The $5 million doesn't cover $10 per student. So there's some discrepancies here, and I understand these are ballpark numbers from earlier comments, but something just doesn't seem to be coming together in my mind.
Mr. Ballfield.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Carlson. Yeah, the numbers really result around what an individual district would be paying on an annual basis versus what you would be paying with bulk purchasing authority. And there's assumptive here that you're going to gain some economies of scale by buying in bulk. Sam's Club does it. You know, we know that we buy in bulk, we save. Certainly, that's the expectation here. And that is, from my understanding, the result that South Dakota saw in their savings. South Dakota doesn't pay $10 per student per year. They pay something less. Ballpark estimator to try and set a threshold here was our attempt to do this. So, Mr. Carlson, Representative Carlson, we don't expect to pay $10 per student as Wayzata would in a single case. We do expect some savings here from the larger savings. But the yield to Wayzata would be that $10 savings because that's what we're paying now. So Wayzata would see a $100,000 net benefit from this, even though the state would be taking it over. $100,000 to us is two teachers. So every district that's already participating in some information system, which is every system, every school system in the state of Minnesota, would see a benefit if they decided to opt in here. It would be actual dollar savings to the district. What the exact yield would be, I don't know. This is my estimation based on, you know, educated response from my knowledge of what different districts, different states pay. Yeah. DFP would yield out the exact amounts. This is my firm estimation on what it might be.
Mr. Chairman, I think you've explained the why you said $10, and I didn't realize at the time you made that comment.
I'm sorry.
You were talking about why Wayzata individually and not part of the bulk purchase. My other question is sort of curiosity. When you referenced South Dakota several times, I'm a retired teacher. I retired about 7 years ago. And getting the information was a little slow when you were dealing with Minnesota school districts, but not overly problematic in my experience, although this would be a great improvement. The big problem we had was getting information about students who came from other states. Do you see, and I'm kind of asking a futuristic question, that someday if Minnesota goes along this road, that school districts that maybe border with South Dakota and would have some movement back and forth, or in our case, often the students we were getting were from Wisconsin, Illinois, Indiana, Arkansas, just to mention a few of the states where we seem to, the high school that I taught at, draw a fair number of students and where getting information was problematic. So as other states do this, do you see some ability to tie in and get that information faster from a South Dakota or maybe someday in Illinois?
Mr. Ballfield.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Carlson, yes. And not without some sort of glue that makes it all stick together like this interoperative ability framework that you've been hearing referred to, some way of exchanging data, you know, in real time. The web enables us to do this. We frankly couldn't have done these kinds of things 10 years ago, but we have the technology now, and we're all active participants in the web, and we see the kind of dynamics that are available to us today. Couldn't have been dreamed of 10 years ago, but it's something that we should expect to be true in the future. Absolutely.
Thank you.
Representative Grimes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Seeing this amendment that just came around got to the heart of what I was going to ask about. I know that Representative Brood mentioned she had two bills, that there are two bills, and I understand the other one is also hers, and that the Senate melded the two together. And so I don't know why we're hearing one and not the other, but I'm taking it that this amendment is the other bill. Representative Brood.
Representative Brood.
It's actually kind of, thank you, Mr. Chair, Representative Farley, that the Senate is in the process of melding them. They don't have language yet. And this is, I guess, kind of a melding of the two, yes. This would be that.
Mm-hmm. Representative Grimes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, because, you know, obviously I signed on to the original bill, but the more I heard about it from other vendors as well as heard about it today, the more I am not convinced a centralized system is the way to go. And so I just read over this amendment, and I like it better that this study group would determine whether or not a centralized system. But I also like Representative Rood's comment that that there is a cost savings to having this standardized data. And that's, I think, kind of what I think, if I can, of course, I can never remember what my reasoning was for things 2 days later, but I think I signed onto this bill thinking about that. And, you know, I know that was the intent of the Mars data too, and I was around at that time in another elected office besides this one when we went to that, and so, and I've always thought that was to be standardized, and I was distressed, I've been distressed then to hear from people like the superintendent of Roseville Area Schools that some of that reporting data isn't standardized in the sense that some districts count administrative costs differently than other districts, and that Roseville Area Schools puts in every last drop and other schools don't, and therefore we might look like we're heavy on administrative costs compared to other districts. So, you know, the idea of standardizing, just so we here at the legislature and citizens all around the state can compare fairly what one district is doing versus another, I think is a very, very good thing. And then as Representative Mariani said, the part about the data that we need for No Child Left Behind, and some of that is sensitive data. I think a study group, I like this amendment. I hope you're going to move it and that we vote on that rather than this other bill, which could take us forever, and I think it needs perfecting. But this other one I would be very comfortable supporting.
Thank you. Representative Rude, I believe the amendment is your amendment.
Yes, it is, and I would move to amend House File 1210 and just to delete all amendments with the language that you have before you.
All right. Are there any questions to the motion before us? Right. Representative Quinzing.
Thank you. I'd like to amend the amendment.
All right. Representative Quinzing, state your amendment.
Line 15, after the word districts, insert at the election of individual districts. This would ensure that it will be an opt-in program.
Right. Representative Rude, to that amendment?
Yes, I accept that. That's
all right. I believe, and Representative Carlson will correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe, Representative Rude, you can incorporate that amendment into your amendment. Right?
Okay.
All right, so.
Yeah,
all right. yeah.
Mr. Chair,
Representative Rude.
Thank you. Somebody did hand me a note that there are other people who are interested in testifying. And that is up to you, but I just wanted to draw your attention to that.
Thank you, Representative Rude. I think we're at that point, seeing no other questioners on the list. So are there anybody in the audience who'd like to testify to the, to the delete all amendment at this point, even though it hasn't been adopted? But to the delete all amendment. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and give us your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I'm Betty Schweitzer, co-executive director of TIES, which is a consortium owned by 37 school districts, and we provide data processing to 250,000 students, which is a third of the state. My comments are originally for the original bill, but I think this can apply to the amendment in terms of the one system statewide. We do... our member district board met and discussed this, and we generally approved the idea of one system, but we did have some concerns about the bill. Some of the concerns, I think, would still transfer to this. Our member district said that they are very happy with the current system that they have in place. They place a high priority on one integrated system with finance, human resources, payroll, and student in one system rather than a separate one. And that if a different system was chosen and it was pulled out, that they thought that they would be going backwards rather than forward. They have also spent $1 million, a member district spent $1 million purchasing the Cognos data warehouse, and that's now tightly integrated with our student information system. They did not want to lose that to have the ability to have data-driven decision-making at their fingertips. They also recognize that other districts may feel strongly about the systems that they have in place because they're currently working for them. So they recommended an alternative that seems another source, and that's to have one to have more than one mandated system, to expand it to three or four systems. Georgia has let a number of districts do that. Also, in the study with the amendment, looking at the study, we do back that because we do think that there is some more information that we can learn from other states. As we researched other states, we found that we haven't found one state that has been successful in implementing one student system statewide. A number of states have tried that and have backed off. Georgia, as I said, has a number of systems that they approve and then pay for. Other states, when they tried to do one system, a number of states, districts refused to go on it. So the state has paid the money, but they haven't gotten the benefits back of being able to share the data or all the things that we talked about today. Those benefits haven't been realized. And some districts, some states have tried to implement it and then have gone back, and added other districts at a tremendous cost. So what we found from the states and I've got a list for you of the states that we contacted, was about six states, and the most successful ones were the ones that had more than one student system that was required for the districts. The other concerns that we had were the language of the bill talks about a student information system that doesn't, either in the amendment, doesn't either address what is the definition of a student information system. The testimony talks about a license fee, but it doesn't address where the system runs. I think they testified today, some are running it in their own district, others the regional centers, the other the central data center. The true savings into districts is when you can outsource that to a data center. And other states have done it that way. Some have done it both ways. Some states run it from the Department of Education, some from consortiums like TIES or ARC, and other ones run it right from the district. So this bill doesn't address whether the cost at $7 million also includes the cost of the hardware. If the district is going to go to a new system and run it in a district, doesn't include the cost to buy the hardware that the system would run on or to outsource the processing to a data center. That hasn't been addressed. Another key part of that is that for a data center, in other states, when it's done either a consortium, a state department of education, or a school district, in Minnesota and other states, those kinds of entities take security very seriously and require background checks for the people that work in those organizations, and ties those also. But anybody in our building has a background check so that any confidential information as an employee, the students are protected from that. The bill doesn't address whether a data center would be opened up for private companies to also have that data in a data center. And that, as we talked earlier, includes the student's name, address, bus route, what they had for lunch, all their contact information, their dentist offices, et cetera. So, if it's in other states, those are usually the state department of education in the school district or the consortium, but not a private company. And I think those are the comments I make that pertain to the amended bill.
Okay. Thank you, Ms. Schweitzer. All right. Any questions? All right. Seeing none. Thank you again. Representative Wood moves the DE2 amendment as amended. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed say no. The amendment is adopted. Representative Wood, any final comments?
Thank you.
Very well done. Members, Representative Wood renews her motion that House File 1210 as amended be recommended to pass and be referred to K-12 Finance. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed say no. Motion prevails. The bill is passed. Thank you, Representative Wood.
Thank you. K-12
Finance. Members, the last bill on Representative Greiling.
Is there any chocolate left in that basket?
Representative Sharon is going to make sure there is none. No, he's not. No, no. There. Members, the last bill on our agenda for this evening is House File 1172. Representative Wilson, welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I would like to move House File 1172 be recommended to pass and be sent to the General Register.
Representative Wilson moves that House File 1172 be recommended to pass and be referred to the General Register. Representative Wilson, to obey.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. House File 1172, members, is simply a bill to create a communication process by way of resolution, local government resolution, between local institutions of government and the state institution of government. It's institution-to-institution communication that has some teeth to it in the respect that if a certain number of local units of government, in the case of school districts, which is what brings it to this committee, 24 school districts, if they all adopt a resolution to address a single unfunded mandate, and that is certified with the state auditor as those resolutions being uniform, the bill, in fact, then requires that any bills introduced to address those resolutions would, in fact, be required to have a hearing on the House and Senate floor, and there at least be a legislative response to those school districts. The threshold is set at 24. As you can see in the bill on page 5, in this brief overview of the bill, there's a listing of all the other types of units of government, and we have various thresholds established. We tried to come up with a formula based on population, and that had to vary because of the sparsity issues versus the density issues of the metropolitan area. Otherwise, the quantity of the more sparsely populated areas got to be so high it was cumbersome and almost impossible. Created almost an impossible threshold to meet. So that's the thrust of the bill. And just for some highlights to direct you to some points and provide some more specifics, page 1, subdivision 6, we have state mandate defined with 5 different mechanisms of defining that. The local government procedure begins on line 19, page 2. It requires the written resolution after public notice and hearing. And it's to identify a variety of things in the resolution. There's 4 things mentioned to be identified, ranging from whether or not the amendment should apply to it, or if it's simply to reform a mandate, citing the state law or rule, identifying any costs of complying with the mandate, stating the reasons the local government needs to opt out or may recommend reforms, and to indicate how the local government will otherwise meet the objectives of the mandate. This is not a bill intended to simply bypass the intent of these mandates, but to simply establish some substantive communication from local governments to better refine our process and improve our understanding about what's really going on out there. And I have some information I'd like to hand out here in a minute if the page is on hand to identify some evidence of why I feel we really need this bill. On page 3, and paragraph B at the top there, there's some hearing requirements that are somewhat duplicative to what I've just mentioned, but it states also that there must at least be one public hearing, and there must be opportunity for the public to provide comment, and public participation must be encouraged. It also references that other policy issues or effects that might result have to be identified at that hearing, along with all the provisions I've just stated that have to be in the resolution. They also have to be included in that public hearing process. Paragraph B on line 26, page 3, that begins the process from the local government to the state auditor, in this case school districts. A local government that adopts a resolution would file this with the state auditor, and they pay a fee for that. The fee is set up as an estimate of what we anticipate this to cost currently, and there's a provision on the top of page 4 line 5 that references current law that allows or requires the auditor to adjust that fee so there's not, it's not a profit, a matter of making a profit, but to actually cover the costs and to adjust it up or down to make sure that, that this is not an unfunded mandate in and of itself. The state procedure for the state auditor begins on line 9, page 4. The auditor is to list on the website all the mandates cited in resolutions, whether the threshold is met, which I'll explain in a minute again in more detail, and to notify the legislature when the threshold is met. That threshold is in, begins on subdivision 3, line 20, and that threshold is the 24 school districts, as I mentioned earlier, but the real nuts and bolts of the bill, very important reading for you, is from line 26 to line 35 on page 4. The legislature must consider the resolutions included in the notice the auditor delivers to the legislature, provided it's before a session convenes in any year. So it can't occur once we start a legislative session. And very important language that I've clarified in a couple committees to address concerns being raised with this bill, lines 28 to 30, the resolution shall not have any effect for implementation unless approved by law under the subdivision. So there's no way conceivably possible for local governments to opt out of a mandate without legislative oversight. This is simply government-to-government communication. The nuts and bolts of that in detail, lines 31 to 35, basically requires by statute that the House and Senate adopt rules ensuring that the bills to specifically address these resolutions are given a priority status and presented to the House and Senate for consideration. So it can't be buried in committee. It has to come up for a vote on the House and Senate floor. The last part of the bill, is as far as the process goes, is opt out after something, action has been taken by the legislature. After implementation, and that's simply that resolutions filed to address a mandate that's already been addressed by other units of government, that would go into effect 30 days after the filing and could only take effect to the extent the law permitted, the law that was passed in response, if a law was passed in response to those resolutions previously. And then section 3 is a list of exceptions involving election law, property tax laws, county financial management procedures, and audit requirements, non-public schools, state auditor provisions, and data practices and open meeting law records and fire code and peace officers. These are exceptions that different members have brought forward. And as I predicted when I started, I'm just about to the point where I'd like to eliminate the whole list. I knew that once I started a list, it would grow, and I decided to do that for a number of reasons, one of which, just to identify the nature of this issue and how it's been difficult over the years to really address unfunded mandates. It's had a debate with some county officials here this last summer, and they were identifying how this bill would have very little effect. And granted, it has less effect than the way it was when I introduced it. But they cited 93 or over, it was over 90 proposals to address mandates. And then when I responded and asked, well, how many were addressed, they said it was less than a handful. And basically what I noted then is that under this bill, resolutions could be introduced and it would guarantee a response and you'd at least know where the legislature stands. With that, Mr. Chair, I will state for the record that all the representatives of various units of government mentioned, just as it pertains to other committees, have in fact presented their support on this bill. The Association of Minnesota Counties, the Intergovernmental County Association, the Township Association, the League of Cities, all those various groups have stated their support of the bill. And Tom Deans is here. If you'd like to hear comments from them, they're supportive of the bill. It's not as strong as it was. A number of these folks were more supportive of the bill, but in an effort to compromise the bill and get it passed, to get, this is kind of an experiment of democracy, And in an effort to get that experiment brought forward, I've made a number of compromises on the bill. With that, Mr. Chair, I'd just like to hand out these graphs, if I could. And as they're being handed out, I'll just...
Will the page please
hold them up so members can see some evidence of why I really feel we need this bill. This first graph shows school district revenue since from 1984 to 2005. And you may or may not be able to see the line, depending on if your eyes are like mine or not. About a 50% increase over this time period. And the lower line here is the inflation-adjusted total revenue per pupil. This is all funding in education. So that's inflation-adjusted. The upper line is total revenue per student, actual. So the upper line basically represents education inflation. And what people tell me, and I've been making this case for a number of years now, when people tell me that we're short money in education, I ask them, are you talking about according to inflation of education, or are you the education budget, or are you talking about in comparison to general economic inflation? And as always, they're, well, I shouldn't say always, but they often don't have an answer to that. But I use this to point out that the legislature is setting policies that raise costs far beyond what we may realize, and we are causing great levels of inflation well above the rate of inflation. 50% increase in spending over the last 20 years. And I think we need to get a handle on these mandates. I think it's very essential. The other graph shows what we're doing to the state budget in general. This is all funds, property tax, everything. And again, we have a drastic increase above the general economic inflation factor. And I think it reflects we need to get established some much more substantive level of communication between units of government to better identify our costs and what our policies are doing to drive those costs higher. With that, Mr. Chair, I'll stand for questions.
Thank you, Representative Olson. It's now Madam Chair.
Oh, I'm sorry.
No, that's perfectly okay. It's hard to tell when we pass the gavel back and forth here at the front. Representative Olson, I have a question before I call on some of our members. About how much time do you think would elapse in your process before a district, for example, a school district, could opt out of a mandate or mandates?
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. I think the time could vary greatly, but I would estimate that this has to occur before a legislative session convenes. So somewhere, it's definitely going to take somewhere in the range of 4 to 5 months, three to five months, say, after resolutions are passed. And then add to that the amount of time that would be required to go through the various hearings. Could be a month at the fastest, most likely 2 months at the local process, maybe three. Because they're required to have at least one hearing, and a lot of public participation is required. So at the very minimum, a month or more at the local level, plus the amount of time at the legislative level.
Thank you, Representative Olson. Representative Nornes.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Olson, can you give some examples of the typical, I mean, what kind of mandates are we looking at that schools or cities, I know we have mandated over the years certain things, but can you give some examples of maybe a typical mandate that they may want to get rid of through this process?
I'm being mandated to go to commerce, but I'm going to disregard that.
No funding went with that. Yeah.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Norris.
Representative Olson.
Oh, I'm sorry, Madam Chair. I got to turn my chair here a bit.
Don't worry.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Representative Norris. Let's just take on, say, special ed. Let's take on one of the more controversial mandates and use it as an example. I tended to avoid using examples, but you have to give something. Let's recognize that special education, when required by the federal government, at least for the federal requirements, there was a commitment of, I think it was 44% funding, and to my knowledge, we've never exceeded 16 to 19% funding. Under this proposal, if school districts wanted to challenge the legislature, if you look on page 2, lines 14 to 16, that's the fifth definition we have established that identifies, I think, what you're driving at. Implements or interprets federal law and by its implementation or interpretation increases or decreases program or service or funding levels. Special education, I can't imagine this institution voting to not provide special education services. It's inconceivable to me. With that in mind, I could imagine local districts saying, we had a commitment of 44%. It's time to hold the legislature accountable. Put their feet to the fire. Let's send a resolution to the legislature and identify these facts, historical facts, that these commitments were made. And when it comes here, we have the discretion to say, okay, they're right, we're going to fund it. This is a specific question about the legislature. It's no longer lost in the debate we had today on the floor. It's no longer lost in that environment of not having this. It's a specific question put before the legislature, and we would then have the discretion of saying, you know, you're right. We're going to do all we can to come up with more money for this particular issue because that commitment was made. Or we're going to call it pass the buck or not, but the truth of the matter is the Fed did make the commitment. And we're going to identify what has happened at our level, and we're going to send a resolution to the federal government, and we're going to tell them they better fund this. Or the local districts could say, now, if you can't fund this, here's some ideas for reform. We really believe we can do this more cost-effectively and force an action in the legislature to do it more cost-effectively, still meeting the objectives of the mandate. So those are all the different scenarios that I could think of, at least in that area, and I purposely chose a more controversial area because I really want members to see how relatively innocuous this really is. Because, number one, I can't conceive of how this institution would vote to repeal that law and the requirements of it.
Representative Greiling.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Nornis asked my question, so I'll just ask for another example. I was going to ask for two or three. He only asked for one.
Representative Olson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Representative Greiling, are we trolling for controversial mandates? Fishing here. No Child Left Behind. You are a co-author with me, Madam Chair, Representative Greiling. We could do the same thing with No Child Left Behind. We could do the same thing with the formula. If there's some ideas out there, my real objective here is reform, efficiency, and it, and you know, once this passes, it's really not going to be a matter of what my objectives are, but that's my intent of this. That's what I'm really going after. I fully expect that if this became law, I would vote against some of the resolutions that come from local government. But the result of that, and I fully expect there'd be some I'd vote for, I think that would be the case with all of us. But the result of that would be that for those specific questions that no longer could get lost in this process, in a committee hearing or wherever, all those units of government would have a specific substantive response on that question that they felt warranted going through this process and asking for an actual specific response to this issue and mitigate this issue of how many years have we been pointing the finger at the local level? How many years have different folks been pointing the finger at the legislature for causing property tax increases? Well, they can point to special ed funding that I just mentioned. They can point to No Child Left Behind. But with this specific response, they have a document to reflect an actual decision that really means something, and it's no longer just rhetoric. And I think that sharpens our ability to debate these issues. Mm-hmm. I think it sharpens our, improves our ability to refine our responses and really define where we all stand.
Representative Peterson. Oh, I'm sorry. Representative Greiling, follow up.
Yeah, thank
you. Want another one.
Right. Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Olson, like a lot of your bills, there's a lot about them that I find very appealing, and then sometimes the devil's in the details. This bill, I find very appealing in terms of the dialogue between the local government and between us, and then we should also be having that discussion between the federal government. And, you know, I think even without this bill, we should be doing that. And clearly, to have a mechanism to make sure we do it a little more, I find appealing. I also am concerned about local governments getting into individual litigation with the federal government if they would opt out of special ed, which I don't, you know, I don't know how many of us here would actually, we get mad at the federal government because they don't provide the funding, but when it came time to not do special ed, I suspect there'd be very few takers in the end here in the legislature, and you and I would probably not be two of them. But, you know, to have that discussion, I think is, you know, we should always be having it. But do you foresee, so I'm not sure we need the bill to do this, but I'm worried about, like, if a local government would take this at face value, opt out of special ed, and then somehow get into litigation problems. You know, how would you comment on that?
Representative Olson.
Madam Chair, Representative Greiling, I think those issues would come out in the process. Take the two examples I just gave, special ed and the No Child Left Behind. Both those examples could result, if we as an institution did not respond properly to those requests, and we're speaking in general terms here, but I know there are requests that could be made that if we didn't respond properly to them could result in some lawsuits. I think those issues would come out in our process here. I'm not afraid of those things being lost. But let's look at this issue with regard to the federal government, because a lot of our mandates, we often don't realize that a lot of our mandates are coming from the federal government. That's why that provision number 5 is in the bill, because so many, the profile of learning, very few people understood that was actually a federal mandate. That's all state law. That whole program for those years was all state law responding to federal mandate. Mm-hmm. And much of what we're doing today is the same thing. Now, I submit to you, wouldn't you like this bill passed in Congress? And I also submit to you, because this is really where I'm going, I also submit to you, if we can't do this ourselves, how can we expect them to do it for us? That's my goal. That's my ultimate vision, to get something like this in Congress so that we can really establish some communication with Congress, because the vast majority of our mandates are really coming from above us. Little do we realize. If you really trace these connections, you will find that most of our mandates are coming from the feds.
Thank you, Representative Olson, for affirming that. I think probably more than you believe. No, they're coming from the feds. Representative Peterson.
Well, I think everybody's intrigued with the idea of not having to follow mandates. It seems that this legislature has made those laws or rules over past legislation over a period of years to deal with what they thought were things that were important to the state and education. And it seems to me that every year we come before this body with bills that would actually implement the kinds of things that this bill would want to do, and that is, for instance, with special ed, paying for it. It's mandated, so we ought to be paying for it, and we've got bills that would pay for it. The same, as I look at this, I would say the standards, certainly those are not completely, you know, would that allow us then to be able to opt out of those, the testing, which certainly is a mandate without funding, the NCLB. You know, a lot of those things are good mandates. We've had mandates for class size, which I think are important. And I'm not sure why we have this bill. I think we've come before the legislature with those kinds of bills already to get the legislature to react. So, and we're getting human cries with 6,000 people standing outside in the cold for the education issues that they feel they need to have addressed. So why do we need this bill? That's my first question.
Representative Olson.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Representative Peterson. I've seen a lot of bills that haven't been able to get a hearing in one of the other bodies or get blocked in committee by procedures or other mechanisms, And there's a phenomenon about some of these mandates where a lot of members are simply afraid to really step forward. And the whole idea of this bill is to allow, give local governments an opportunity to rally behind by taking a stand themselves, passing a resolution, have public hearings, go through that entire process and really rally behind the legislator that's willing to take up their cause. Now, there's one thing, a critique I'll offer to my bill in response to your question, Representative Peterson. And that is, under this bill, if everything was done and no member is willing to introduce a bill to address the resolutions, nothing happens. We can't really mandate that a member introduce a bill. There's a certain step of faith and trust that if 24 school districts pass resolutions to propose to opt out of something or to simply reform it, that somewhere in those areas there'd be a legislator willing to take the lead and introduce a bill. There's just simply no sensible way to require a legislator to do that. Now, I think the bill is valuable from the standpoint of putting something out, proposing something to local governments from this institution that says, if you take these steps, we're going to guarantee you get a response from this body that is representing the full body, both House and Senate, and there will be no games played. No games. There's a lot of issues over the years that I think members have been simply afraid to address and afraid to face votes on. And I hear those complaints at the local level, and I hear rhetoric at the state level, and I hear rhetoric at the local level. This could eliminate that rhetoric and say, okay, if you really feel this way about mandates at the local level, here's your chance to push the issue. Like I said to the counties last year, over 90 mandate requests, but there are only a handful addressed. After this bill passed, they couldn't say that to me anymore.
That's right.
And that was exactly my response to them, and they stopped talking about it at that point. So it's really cuts through the chase of a lot of political rhetoric.
Representative Peterson, follow-up.
Yes, Ms. Chair. I would ask, and I'm trying to read if these are unfunded mandates, and I have to ask the question, would collective bargaining be part of that, some of those mandates?
Representative Olson.
Madam Chair, Representative Peterson, members, would you argue that collective bargaining is an unfunded mandate?
I think you could make that argument either way.
I think you could too, Madam Chair, Representative Peterson. The bill clearly states, if you look on page 1, line 25, it imposes a cost on a local government unless the state appropriates money for the local government to cover the total cost of the mandate. I think because it's a collective bargaining situation, and what they agree to is a local decision, I think you can argue it both ways, but I think you can more easily argue that it's not a state unfunded mandate. The only way I would argue it's a state unfunded mandate is, let's say, with regard to teacher negotiations, let's say the January 15th deadline comes to play, and they feel circumstantially there's no way conceivably possible to negotiate this, and we're forced to agree to something above what we would normally agree to, and therefore it's an unfunded mandate. Now, that's kind of a stretch, but I'm just giving you an example. I know much more versed on that law than I am, having worked in that area. Representative Peterson, with all due respect to that experience, I think you could make a much better case one way or the other than I can. But just from my distance of experience, I think it's easier to argue that it's not an unfunded mandate than that it is. But I do recognize you could argue it either way.
Representative Peterson, follow up.
Thank you, Ms. Chair. Representative Olson, perhaps you might want to amend that to put it on that list of exclusions.
Representative Olson.
Madam Chair, Representative Peterson, I don't really want anything on that list. And I'd entertain a motion to delete the entire Section 3.
Representative Dietrich.
Yes, Thank you, Madam Chair. I just have a couple of questions about the school district revenue per student. And I realize this isn't that isn't the real flavor of the bill, but I just need to understand some of this before I can move to the bill. And the first question is you have the thick line that represents inflation adjusted to total revenue per student. What did you use for inflation?
Representative Olson.
Madam Chair, Representative Dietrich, you can see in the bottom it comes from House Research, and the general standard economic inflation indicator that's pretty standard upstairs is the one that's used. It's what the one that's most commonly used. I'm sorry I can't state the exact reference, but I believe it's, if I remember right, it's just over 3% or so at the time of this being done.
Okay.
3 to 4, somewhere in there.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Olson, then the thinner top line, what I am wondering in both lines, and is that obviously total revenue per student, is that a statewide average?
Representative Olson.
Madam Chair, Representative Dietrich, that is correct.
Representative Dietrich.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And so are you alluding to the fact that you think that there's a certain percentage of in between those two lines that you think is accounted to unfunded mandates?
Representative Olson.
Madam Chair, Representative Dietrich, just in the time I've been here, mm-hmm. depending on who you ask, the profile of learning was $200 to $300 million.
Mm-hmm.
But just, you know, and then take special ed and just go down the list. And the profile of learning occurred. If this bill had been in place, we could have reformed the profile of learning much quicker. It would have given school districts the ability to speak up in ways that they currently don't. And if they choose not to under this bill, and they really don't have a lot of grounds to complain. So that's really what I'm after. But the answer is yes.
Mm-hmm.
I believe there's very much... because at the local level, if they just point the finger at us, generally speaking, and at the state level, if we point the finger at them, generally speaking, we don't get anywhere. It doesn't help people with how they vote and how they make decisions, and they're the ones that are really supposed to be making the informed decisions along with us.
So if these...
Representative Dietrich.
So if these mandates are unfunded, what is the reason for the spike in the total revenue?
Representative Olson.
Madam Chair, Representative Dietrich, I'm not sure I understand your question.
Representative
Dietrich.
Thank you, Madam Chair. If the mandates are unfunded, what is the driving cost of this top line?
Representative Olson.
Madam Chair, Representative Dietrich, well, it would involve a number of things, but I believe personally that one major factor is the fact that a lot of the mandates aren't funded, and that causes the actual total amount of revenue that we need to provide students has had to go up more than the general economic inflation rate has. With one hand at the legislature, we mandate. Mm-hmm. With the other hand, we try to provide funding. I remember documents. I was here when the profile started, and I remember documents where we were able to prove that it was grossly underfunded. Representative Reiling and I worked on the No Child Left Behind. We had documents to prove it's terribly underfunded. And I believe that's very much a part of what's driving this.
So partially funded.
Representative Dietrich?
Partially funded mandate.
That's correct. Madam Chair, Representative Dietrich.
Representative Wardlaw.
Very good.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I understand that your bill would be a mandate to us to make sure if 24 school districts agree on the same opt-out procedure that both bodies would have to hear it. A committee chairperson would have to put it on his agenda. He couldn't just bury it someplace. And I'm wondering, is it possible that 24 school districts could get together with the frivolous opt-out procedure and What do you say to that?
Representative Wardlow. Madam Chair.
Representative Wardlow.
This is certainly a process like most processes we have here that could be abused, and we have the equal opportunity to simply vote no and show them that it's fruitless to abuse that process and just make that case, as in any debate on any point.
Are there any in the audience who want to testify for or against this bill? Yes, please come forward. Let's take the pros first. If there are no pros, then we'll hear the cons. No, I guess you're both cons. Come forward, please.
Welcome.
Please introduce yourselves for the record. Say your name into the microphone, and welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. Lisa Nentel-Bloom for Education Minnesota, and I apologize for Ms. Alzweiger not being here. She had a prior commitment. As Representative Olson knows, through the years we have had some concerns with this bill, and I'd like to talk about a few of them that still exist in our minds. First of all, your job as legislators is to make the tough decisions and to look at issues both from a local perspective but also from a statewide perspective, the opportunity to look to see how they impact your local district, but also to see if there's consistency and equity from one part of the state to another. You listen to all sides' positions, and you hear from the various different interest groups. We've appreciated the challenges that faces that provides for you, but also how seriously you take that role. It feels like a law passed by the legislature, however, under this bill really wouldn't be a law until a school board decided that they wouldn't oppose it in some way. A small group of districts, Representative Olson mentioned, 24 districts could start a campaign to organize other districts to opt out of a mandate, similar, I believe, to what Representative Wardlow had just mentioned. It is true that the law would be in place, but with those 24 districts being certified by the state auditor and then wishing to opt out, with the hearing that moves forward then to the legislature, it does appear that a small group of districts can determine can actually change law in some way. The bill seems to give more power to school boards. We wonder, for example, would legislators have the same reaction to this vote to opt out if it was given to a group of administrators, if it was given to a group of local exclusive bargaining representatives, the local union. It just begs the question, could it be a group of different parents that got together, for example? We know you take your job seriously, and many of the decisions you make are for the safety, health, and quality of education for our children on a uniform basis. We worry that once this bill would be enacted, and if in fact it would then be affirmed after the state auditor and legislative action, etc., that would we then have two systems of law? Would you have the districts who could opt out and any additional districts who chose to opt out after the legislature said it was okay, at the same time having other districts who would not opt out? And so that very deliberate attempt to have a statewide consistency then actually having us being governed under two sets of laws for some specific areas. We certainly worry about that. We worry, for example, about some of the things that have been put in place over the years to really improve student achievement, working on class size reduction, working on the new academic standards, working on staff development. One of the things that we've heard in testimony, for example, on behalf of alternative compensation and QComp has been the importance of staff development. That set-aside has been very helpful, and while it wasn't mandated over the last 2 years, it's a key component to QComp. And so we are concerned that some of the mandates we speak of are actually mandates that work to improve student achievement, and we'd really hate to see that happen. So in summary, Madam Chair and members, we've appreciated that you have tried with all your effort to pass laws for quality statewide, opportunities for our students and our staff and our parents and our school boards, and we encourage you not to support this bill. Thank you.
Representative Olson, do you wish to respond? Yes, or would you like to hear the other testifier?
I'll wait till we hear all of
this.
Thank you.
Please introduce yourselves for the record and welcome to the committee.
Thanks, Madam Chair. My name is Kristen Beckman, and I'm with the Service Employees International Union. We represent about 9,000 public employees in school districts that are everybody but teachers, so the lunch ladies, bus drivers, custodians, paraprofessionals. and we respectfully rise in opposition to this bill tonight. And I'll be very brief. Lisa covered a lot of the reasons why. In general, we're worried about the consistency across the state in school districts, in laws that deal with how the state has set up for school districts to deal with employees. And in specific, you know, a number of representatives have asked for examples. The one that comes to our mind is pay equity. Because of the nature of the job classification that we represent and the low wages that typically are paid for those job classifications, we represent about two-thirds to three-fourths women. And so pay equity is very important for our union. And so that is one example of a state mandate that we would be afraid that school districts would come together and try to opt out of. And we feel that, you know, it, that is just an example of some of the other things that we would like to see stay consistent across the state. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Representative Olson, your response.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you for that testimony. We've had a fun discussion on this through the process and through the years. It's been a hard time beating the rap that I created by making a really strong bill when I introduced it and gave local governments the authority to just override the legislature. And it's been a long time coming to override that whole reputation I created with this thing.
Oh, Representative Olson, are you softening?
Yeah.
Must be because you got married and you have a family.
No, nothing to do with that. No, on a serious note. I just want to note for the record that all the concerns that have been raised with this bill pertain to provisions that are not currently before you. Because this bill does not allow anybody to opt out of anything. Valid concerns on those proposals and those issues. But let me even note that the concerns from Ms. Neckelblum? Olson is so easy. The concerns of having two systems. If you look in the bill, you'll see home rule charter cities, you'll see statutory cities. We have mandates that apply to only certain kinds of cities. Mm-hmm. We have mandates in the school system currently to apply to only certain school districts in certain circumstances. And yet we have mandates that fit all, but they may not really fit all. And so I don't see any way this is going to create two systems nor address the issues of consistency or raise issues of consistency that this legislature wouldn't have oversight for and be able to address as it comes before us. So we have a lot of inconsistencies out there, inconsistent situations. And too many of our mandates are one size fits all, and that's actually what we need to look at. So those are good sounding concerns, but I really don't feel they fit to this bill because of the oversight the legislature has. And I'm going to reference again a statement in the bill that was actually crafted to address this point, one of these points, and that's on page 4, lines 28 through 30, because this will not create a separate process of law. It only allows the initiation of legislation that guarantees a response. Mm-hmm. The resolution shall not have any effect for implementation unless approved by law under this subdivision. So not only does the legislature have to pass it, bicamerally, the governor has to sign it. So there's no new process here. This is just ordinary legislative process, yet allowing local governments to initiate an action just like I would like to initiate to the federal government, because that's really my target. Thank you.
Is there any other discussion? Representative Garland.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Madam Chair. Representative Olson, would you add pay equity and collective bargaining to your exceptions?
Representative Olson.
Madam Chair, if the committee would like, I would like to delete Section 3. Because I know it's just going to keep growing. And the points I made really do apply to everything in the bill. If somebody wants to make that motion, I'd call it friendly.
Representative Darling.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I don't have any language, but I would like to add those two things if Ms. Larson has a chance to draw them up quickly.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, I think Representative Olson, if this is needed, we'll have one ready for the floor, right? If we get this out of here tonight. Yes. Is there any other discussion?
Sure.
Yes. Representative Lapps.
Madam Chair, Representative Olson, would you add human rights laws and discrimination and equal employment opportunity laws to the exceptions?
Representative Olson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Lapps. I'd still like to delete Section 3. We don't need anything in there. It's committee's decision. I just assume delete Section 3.
Mr. Chair, I'll move to delete Section 3. Is there any discussion? All those in favor?
It's a friendly amendment.
Thank you. Accepted by the author. Very good. With that, Representative Olson renews his motion that House File 1172 as friendly. Excuse me. Well, he accepted it as friendly, so I don't know.
If you want to vote on it, members, so we have the will of the
committee. Okay, yes. So all those in favor of the friendly amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed say no.
No.
The motion does prevail. It is adopted. Representative Olson then renews his motion that House File 1172 as amended be recommended to pass and be referred to the General Register. Is there any further discussion? Yes, Representative Marquardt.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Olson, I've supported your bill up to this point, but if I understand this, by leaving Section 3, I mean now that Subdivision 9 dealt with peace officers and firefighters, and there's some parts up here that deal with property tax laws, which could be local government aid and all sorts of things. I didn't want to add any further deletions, but this changes things somewhat. And I mean, I don't know if you knew what we...
Madam Chair, Representative Marquardt, the discussion's good and your points are good. I mean, my mandate was in there. My don't touch my mandate was in there. And, you know, that's beside the point. As I keep making the points of why we shouldn't expand it and it keeps growing... The quandary that I'm in is that it's just going to keep growing and growing and growing, and that's the nature of the issue I'm trying to address. Mm-hmm. I'm not afraid of facing votes on all these issues, and this bill isn't going to change how I vote. This bill can be construed the way some have construed it, that it means we're going to get out of we're going to be out of collective bargaining. We're going to go down the list, No Child Left Behind, special ed. It's not true. And my position on these various issues, No Child Left Behind, is clear. And other issues, it's clear. This bill will not allow any of these actions in Section 3 to occur without legislative action. It simply means that now that they're not on the list, we could face votes on them under this proposal. That's all it means.
Representative Norness.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just one quick question, Representative Olson. Is there anything going on in the Senate that mirrors what you're doing here in the House?
Representative Olson, I know my senator carries a companion. Go ahead.
Madam Chair.
Always Senator, Representative Olson.
Senator Wergen has agreed to work to get it through the House. Today's vote is very important, and I hope we can do it, and then we'll work for action in the Senate.
Now, Representative Olson, I believe she has a hearing coming up on it, as we talked about it last night. With that, again, Representative Olson renews his motion that 1172, as amended, be recommended to pass and be referred to the General Register. All those in favor signify by saying yes.
Yes.
Yes. All those opposed say no.
No.
The motion prevails.
Madam Chair, I'd like a roll call, please.
Division has been called.
Division.
All those in favor, raise your right hand. All those opposed, your right hand. The motion does prevail. The count is 10 yes, 9 no.
until the bill is adopted and sent to the General Register. Yes, I'm going.
Madam Chair?
Yes, Representative Olson.
I want to thank you, members. Long battle on this, but I want to state for the record, because of the substantive change in Section 3, which is arguably substantive, I'm going to go back to all those who asked for various provisions in this to be considered, so they consider what's happened. I'm going to discuss it with them. The reason I took the position here today that I did is there's no end to creating a don't touch my mandate list.
Mm-hmm.
And we just have to draw a line somewhere, and that's why I wanted a vote on it. I didn't want to incorporate that. I wanted a vote on it in committee because there's no end to creating this list. There really isn't. And I think we should just take courage and face these votes if they come up.
Thank you, Representative Olson.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members.
Representative Marquardt, have you looked over the minutes? Would you be willing to look them over and move them?
Madam Chair, I move the minutes.
Representative Marquardt moves approval of the minutes from Wednesday, March 23. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed, same sign. Excuse me, were there any additions or corrections? Representative Marquardt did such a good job. I don't think there were. Motion approved. And members, this meeting is adjourned. Marquardt.